Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Welcome back to the Savvy Dentist Podcast, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Today, I'm absolutely delighted to be having a conversation with Catherine Maslin. Catherine is one of the coolest business people I know. She's incredibly smart, she's got an infectious sense of humor, and she's just one of the nicest people you'll ever meet. On top of that, she is just whip smart when it comes to running a business. She runs Brisbane's leading naturopathy clinic, and she is such a pioneer in the field of healthcare and business models around healthcare. She runs a subscription-based clinic in Brisbane, and she is just so smart when it comes to thinking about how to operate a business at a very high level. In our conversation today, we go over all the different models that she's looked at. We cover why a subscription model's working for her. We unpack the lessons from that. We also dive deep into her story because Catherine is a woman who has got incredible resilience, not just in business, which she's got tons of, but in life as well. And as you'll hear, her story is remarkable. She's overcome incredible adversity to have the success that she's now got. And she's got so many life lessons there that she shares in this conversation. I'm absolutely pumped to bring you this interview because I know, talking to lots of dentists, that there are people dealing with different issues and needing to have some tools that they can apply to their business and to their own personal life as well. And Catherine unpacks all her lessons and shares the insights and the journey along the way as well. So I've got a really full action-packed interview today for you. I'd also just like to send out a little cheerio because we have had a lot of listeners from Japan. It brings me a great deal of pleasure to know that we've got a lot of listeners in Japan. Of course, I've got a mother-in-law who's Japanese and a wife who's half Japanese, so it brings us a great deal of pleasure. So I'd like to say hello to all our Japanese listeners and all the other listeners from around the globe as well. But without any further ado, I'd like to share this interview with Catherine Maslin with you. I hope you enjoy it as much as I've enjoyed recording it. Have a great day. Catherine Maslin, thanks so much for taking the time out of your day all the way from Brisbane to come and hang with us on the Savvy Dentist Podcast. How are you going?
Awesome. How are you?
Yeah, really well. Thanks, really well. I've been dying to have this conversation for ages because, you know, we see each other at various business things and your business is doing, you know, wonderful things, getting all these awards and accolades. And every time I see you, you know, you're getting some new award for something, which is tremendous and terrific. I'm really keen to understand a little bit about your business, obviously how you got to this point. We'll go through that in a moment. But just for the listeners here, can you just give us a bit of a backstory? How did you kind of get into the business that you're in and what's been the journey for you so far?
For me, it all started when I was 15 years old and I moved to North Queensland by myself without my parents. And I had a lady up there called Jenny, who was, I guess, a bit like a second mother to me. And unfortunately, Jenny was quite sick. So she had a condition called lupus, which is an autoimmune disease. So I was only 15 when I met her. And what I observed over the years is that Jen just got sicker and sicker. And as she got sicker and sicker, her medication cabinet grew and grew, but nothing really seemed to help her. And it was very unfortunate that Jenny actually ended up passing away by the age of 52. So I guess that really triggered something in me to think, oh, there's got to be a better way. And what happened was I actually stumbled across a book on herbal medicine, as it will. And I just thought, oh, my goodness, there are all of these amazing medicines that people don't even know about. And from then I went on to study herbal medicine and then naturopathy. So I probably was out on my own for about 4 years. And I always knew I wanted to have a business. I don't know why. I didn't particularly hang around with other people with businesses or have any of that going on. But I always knew that I wanted to create my own space. So about 6.5 years ago, I started Brisbane Natural Health. And I'd worked in a few clinics. And the idea is I wanted to create a place where people could truly work collaboratively and be supported to do that. And that covered all levels of wellness. So looking at kind of mind, body, spirit, really focusing on the emotional wellness side of stuff as well as the physical.
Well, that's really cool. And, you know, the whole journey has obviously been one like every journey that, you know, has its, you know, ups and downs and so on, because, you know, very rarely is success linear. We all seem to have fits and starts. Yes, you know, there's that wonderful diagram. I'm sure, you know, people see the, you know, what people think success is, and it's this lovely straight line. Then you see the, you know, what success really looks like, and it's this whole squiggly line going everywhere.
100%.
Yeah, okay. So I was just going to check in. I'm assuming your squiggly line is as squiggly as the rest of ours. So
mine's really squiggly.
Yeah, mine too, I can tell you. So I'm curious to ask, you know, based on the squiggliness of your line, what do you think have been some of the biggest challenges you've had to overcome thus far?
Oh, there's been a heap, Jesse. But I guess as a business owner, it's the biggest challenges that I've had have always come down to people and getting the right people and getting the right team, and unfortunately having some quite unfortunate circumstances in the past with, you know, people not necessarily doing the right thing by the business. So they're definitely the biggest challenges that I've had for sure.
And when you say people not doing the right thing by the business, you know, without, you know, kind of breaking confidences and all that sort of stuff, can you just give us an example of what the, you know, what someone did that wasn't the right thing by your business? Because I'm sure there'll be plenty of people who'll go, yeah, I completely relate to that.
Yeah, well, probably like the biggest one for like as a practitioner is, you know, practitioners coming in and, you know, building up their client base and leaving,
yeah, and taking
them across is the biggest one. So I guess that's happened a little bit. I did have a team member once, which was one of my senior staff members that left to open a practice that wasn't supposed to be related to ours, but essentially was identical to ours, and then kind of poached my other team members to come and work with her. So that was probably one of the most stressful things that ever happened in my life. And in fact, at that point, I was kind of on the knife's edge whether I was going to let the business go or not. So that was pretty intense as well.
Yeah. So, okay. So that's really interesting. So it got to that point where you're thinking, my God, this is obviously, you know, at a point where I'm, do I continue? Do I not?
I've had a few of those points.
Okay. Tell me about that.
I guess it's just, you know, as a business owner, as I've progressed as an entrepreneur, there's so many things that I want to do and there's so many parts of my business. So I've got Brisbane Natural Health, which is my physical business here in Brisbane, but, you know, we're servicing people virtually. There's a lot of other stuff that I'm doing with my own personal branding. Like, you know, I'm an author, so I have my book. There's when these times are really tough and things kind of, when you're stuck in the mud a little bit, it's kind of, you know, easy to daydream and go, well, what would it be like without this physical premise? You know, would I be able to actually take these other avenues? And it's hard to know, but, you know, undoubtedly probably in 5 or 10 years, I'm going to want to sell the business and then pursue some of these other things just to mix it up a little bit.
So let me ask you a question, because when you're at that point and you're lying in bed at night thinking, oh God, do I keep doing this or do I let it go? Or, you know, what was the decision-making process for you at that point? And I guess what I'm trying to understand is the psychology behind the decision and the ability to, you obviously had to have a fair bit of resilience and dig deep and kind of drag yourself up by the bootstraps, so to speak. How did you get through that?
I think I've got a lot of resilience. I've been through quite a lot in my lifetime. So I recognize when these things are happening that they're temporary and change is quick to occur as well. But for me, like making the decision was going, well, what am I actually trying to achieve here? And have I actually achieved it yet? Because Brisbane Natural Health is my baby. As we all know that we've put our heart and our soul and our blood and our sweat and our tears into our businesses. And I do believe that there is a time when things are tough to pull the plug, but none of these circumstances have really been big enough to justify me doing that. You know, there's still a lot of work that I need to do and a lot of good stuff that needs to be done. So the process for me was really to go, well, you know what, like we can get through this. And I'm quite creative in my approach to things. So once you get through the initial heartache and trauma and that type of thing that happens to us as business owners when shit goes wrong, basically, it's really action. So I'm quite good at taking action and taking the steps to get myself out of situations.
Yeah, so again, there's some really, you know, solid advice there. So for everyone listening, you know, I'd really highlight that point. It comes back to action, because if nothing changes, nothing changes. And, you know, Catherine, we both mix in similar circles, you know, business-wise, and we often hear about prolific beating perfect and taking, you know, massive imperfect action. Is that sort of something that, you know, you hold dear in your day-to-day activities? You kind of go, you know what, I might not get this 100% spot on, but I've just got to do something. So, you know, let's throw something on the wall and see what sticks.
Absolutely. That's definitely true. And I've always used that maxim, like prolific beats perfect. However, for myself, I'm a creator and I like to instigate things fast. So I make a decision and I want it done and into the business. But I have had a couple of instances in the past where doing that without strategy behind it has kind of really bit me in the ass a little bit. So I guess these days, and probably in the last 6 to 12 months, really, I think I'm just maturing a little bit more in the way that I'm looking at my business and approaching things. And I'm making making decisions, but then I'm putting a bit more strategy behind it before I implement and roll it out. And it's just made things run a little bit more smooth, I guess. And it doesn't mean it needs to be perfect. Like, we're definitely still running beta versions of our new memberships and other things that we'll bring in. But it's, you know, it works pretty well.
So one of the things, Catherine, is, you know, I'm sure it's the same in your profession as ours. Perfectionism is something that can really serve a dentist because it allows us to have that, you know, that keen eye for detail to, you know, achieve good clinical results, to do all those things to a high degree of precision. And so being able to turn perfectionism on and off is sometimes a challenge. I certainly struggle with that as well. And while I've gotten better with it over the years, what advice would you have to someone who's going, yeah, that whole prolific and perfect thing, I get it, I understand it, but it just turning down that perfectionism a little bit when it comes to business is a bit challenging. What sort of thoughts do you have around that?
You know, it's never going to be perfect, ever. Exactly. So it's, if you're doing something new for the first time, you need to do it and actually trial it and initiate it for you to actually see what the holes there are and see what improvements are to be made. So we're a membership-only clinic, and it's taken us about 2 years to perfect our memberships. And to be honest, we're still refining and we're still doing that. And the first version was very, very different to what it is today. But if we had procrastinated about it and kind of went, oh, well, it's not perfect, and is this going to work or that going to work, we would have never got there. So we put it out into the market, we tested it out there, and then we had feedback from patients and our practitioners as to what was working and what needed to be improved. So you do have to, you know, trust that your beta version isn't going to be perfect.
Yeah, the absolute gold. So let's just talk about this membership model, because this is something that, you know, I've been kicking around in my head for a long, long time, and we've got a few little things that we do, but probably not as exclusively or as full on as you do. So just so I understand it, your entire practice is a recurring membership model.
That's right, yeah.
So people would pay a certain amount of money per week, per month, whatever it is, and that would give them a certain amount of access to, you know, clinical services, a certain amount to product or whatever it may be, and that's how it rolls. Is that basically it?
That's right. So basically, as a member, they get what they need to move through. So, and they'll be offered a membership relevant to what's going on for them. So it's not like a cookie cutter effect. So not everyone's going to need to do well. We have two core things we offer. So say, for instance, if they see our naturopaths, we have our naturopathy appointments, and then we have what we call ancillary appointments. So this would be appointments with other people in the clinic to support them, which might be massage or acupuncture or, you know, hypnotherapy, stuff like that. So what happens is some patients will come through and they'll need ancillary appointments, and others won't. So there's a sliding price scale depending on what inclusions are in there. But the core to all of our memberships really is our education. And we've worked really, really hard to develop just a really kick-ass education system. So we have workshops on in the clinic, we have webinars, we have online learning, basically everything that they need so that they're self-empowered and that they're not relying on us for their wellness.
Yeah, I love that. And so here's the thing for everyone listening, and I'm going to make a massive assumption here, Catherine, so feel free to shoot me down if I get this wrong. What I'm guessing is that has meant for much steadier cash flow for your business, much greater predictability, stability of earnings, all those sorts of things.
Yep. So, and also less cancellations or rescheduling. So we don't really get too many people cancelling, but we used to get probably, you know, I would say like, you know, a fifth of people just moving, you know, just moving around a little bit. And just that moving would just leave caps in the appointment book. So it just eliminates it completely, because once someone becomes a member, we pre-book all of their appointments and they're in there. So we can plan, we know how many new members we can accept into the clinic each week for it to reach our capacity. We know what we need to service them. And yeah, it's recurring. So it means that if they're going to miss an appointment, then it's on them and not us. So it doesn't really happen. People are much more committed and they're supported.
See, I really love that. And again, I was talking to a couple of people about this the other week or maybe the other month. I was doing a lot of studying of John Warrilow's work, you know, The Automatic Customer and Built to Sell and all those sorts of books. And yeah, there's a lot of evidence as well that shows that a business that has a significant portion of recurring revenue is actually far more valuable. So coming back to your plan of, you know, perhaps selling your practice in the next however many years, it's a much more valuable proposition with recurring revenue than without it, right?
It is. And it's an asset. So really, this is like a really big asset to us, the product that we've built, the systems that we've built around it. It hasn't come without work. It's actually taken a lot of work in the background to get it right. And it's funny, because when I first released memberships, I thought, oh, like everyone's going to be doing this, like everyone will copy it. But once I did it, I was like, no, they won't. It's going to take a while because it's actually – there's so much involved. Like you've got to consider culture. You've got to consider changing mindset of people that are used to doing something one way because there's nobody else in our industry that's doing it this the way that we are. So you do have to really spend a lot of time on training and that type of thing to get the whole team on board.
So where were the sticky points? What were the major ones? What did you find your patients were resistant to it, or was it the staff or a bit of both? What was the big sticky point?
So if you think about it, like our whole sales funnel had to change and everything from the top down. So we went from, well, we had packages, but that was kind of a little bit different. So we went from people looking for a naturopath, they're looking online, they just want to book an appointment and then kind of as they go, you know, so we'll see them every 2 or 4 weeks or whatever it is, to actually being sold a complete solution, which is quite different. So all the way from our website to what we said on the phone to emails that we sent patients, like we had to do a little information video that they saw before they come into the clinic so they were ready. So we at the beginning, we didn't have all of these things in place, probably because of, as I mentioned, the lack of strategy behind it, partly is we kind of maybe launched that little bit too quickly, which stressed my team out a little bit. They love me. So that's probably the main things. And also just getting your sales pitch right, because we're needing to be able to communicate this to the client. But also until our practitioners and myself had done this a while and have been used to the concept, it's hard for us to sell it because we hadn't seen the results of that. Makes sense. Like we have an idea and a concept about it, but now that we've been running it for 2 years, it's clearly obvious this is the better way. So there's no way that we would want them to come session to session because we're doing them a disservice.
Yeah. So let me just ask another question, because I know there'll be dentists kind of listening to this going, oh yeah, that won't work in dentistry because of, you know, whatever reason, right? And I'm sure you would have encountered some of that already. If you stress tested that idea before you did it, I'm sure there would have been some naysayers. So here's my question to you, and I'm sure you've had to, you know, counter this in any way, is, you know, you've got a patient base of how many people, all of them with different needs, different concerns. How did you create a membership that would cater for all those, that vast amount of individuality from one patient to the next?
So we looked at what they were doing already and how people were behaving. So it did take a little while to get it right, because initially we were like, okay, well, we'll make this membership and we'll do a bit of nutrition because, you know, people need to do that and a bit of this. But what we found was that people weren't fitting and we had to make it more flexible. So the memberships that we have at the moment, they do have quite a bit of flexibility within them. And there's also three levels. So it means they have a level where they're just doing naturopathy. There's a level where they have, you know, support services. And then there's a higher level where they've kind of got the works and they're doing everything. And depending on what's going on for them, people will fit in there quite well. And then they have the ability to actually pay for appointments on top of that as well. And this is what I'm seeing, like what I was chatting to you, for dentistry it worked perfect. Okay, yearly checkups, so that you have, like, you know, a membership fee, and then you have set fees for different services on top of that. So it's like, oh well, if something comes up and you chip a tooth, this is how much it costs, you know, if you need a filling, this is how much it costs. And you could have those different tiers depending on what they're going, because you'd probably find that although everyone's, you have like a big wide variation, there would be certain patterns of your, what we call your regular clients, not just the ones that come in every, you know, 12 years to get their teeth checked.
Yes.
But the good ones that look at preventative dental care and look after themselves, you'd find there are these different tiers. Or you might have one for, you know, people who are over 65 or 70 because they're more likely to have problems. So there'd be a certain flavor to what people do, and you could kind of package something around that easily.
Yeah, I think it's a fabulous thing. And so for everyone listening, this is, I believe, going to be the trend of the future, something that we've been, you know, testing, measuring a few things in our practice as well. And I know there's some other people who are, you know, equally testing and measuring and rolling out a few things. But what I like that Catherine has done particularly is it's a whole of practice approach, meaning that you go to Catherine's practice and it is essentially a membership. And I love that for a whole variety of different reasons.
It took a while to get there. So initially we had a bit of a crutch, you know, and our crutch was that, you know, we had sort of like this mini membership fee, which was like, you know, well, you can come session to session, but you need to pay this sort of retainer. But really it was just a crutch. And as soon as we got rid of any of those things that didn't fit the reason why we were doing what we did, it just flowed so much better.
Yeah, so again, I've got a mate of mine and mentor, a guy called James Schramko, and when talking about memberships, he always says, look, you can't be half pregnant, because you're kind of in or you're out when it comes to membership, and I think, you know, getting rid of that crutch would certainly fit in with that model.
I would agree with that, yeah. And it's the thing is, if we're seeing people session to session, we're disservicing our members because they pull the energy out of it. So if I see somebody two or three times, in those initial phases, there's a lot of planning, there's a lot of collaboration between our other practitioners. And then if they don't follow through with their treatment, it's that energy is kind of pulled out of the practice that could be used for other people.
Yeah, and again, yeah, really, really, I think good benefit for the patient above all else, and obviously really good business benefit as well. So I wanted just to switch gear for a second because, you know, the whole membership model I think is really fascinating. But what I wanted to talk about a little bit was, you know, the squiggly line that we referred to earlier, because you go to loads of business things, I go to loads of business things, and sometimes I hear some advice that's, you know, given, you know, very freely by some people, and I think, wow, that's interesting advice.
Interesting.
So here's my question. What's the worst advice you hear being given to businesses these days?
Oh, God. It's a hard question to answer because naturally I don't look for the negative. Like if I hear negative things, I don't store them in my brain. I'm kind of like, oh, okay.
Chuck that away quickly.
Yeah. I don't even know if I can answer that question.
Okay.
And I think too it's, I don't know, the people that I'm hanging around with and choosing to surround myself with I don't find them telling people what they should and shouldn't do so much. I feel like when you're giving business advice, it needs to come from experience, either your experience or sharing stories or knowledge, not kind of, you know, just from an ideas base.
I couldn't agree more. And again, that's something I see as well. You see a lot of people saying, hypothetically, you know, you should do this. And you go, well, what's your experience around that?
I think maybe the worst thing can be for someone to give advice on someone's business without knowing their business. You know, and I've had that happen to me of someone going, oh, no, you really need to do this. I'm like, no, I really don't because this is what's going on in my business right now. So I do see a little bit of that happening for sure. So it's worthwhile, you know, if someone's giving you advice for your business, they need to know what is your business, you know, how do you operate, what's your purpose. Otherwise it kind of doesn't really make any sense and it doesn't really fit the context.
Yeah. So you mentioned to me earlier in our conversation that you're quite resilient, and you mentioned to me that your line's been quite squiggly along the way. How is it that you've been able to cultivate such resilience? What is it do you think that allows you to be resilient, and where do you draw that from?
Well, personality-wise, like I've always been resilient. I've always been a bit of quite strong-willed, but I had quite a troubled childhood. So my father was quite abusive. So I grew up in a home where domestic violence was a part of everyday life. And in a really small nutshell, in the last kind of 5 or 10 minutes we have, basically what happened was I dropped out of school really early. I ended up becoming a heroin user. I was a heroin addict at the age of 15, living on the streets of Melbourne. So I was homeless for probably about 6 months. And then from there, I was very fortunate that I had a friend of mine that moved to North Queensland, and I went up to live with her, and thus the moving to North Queensland at 15 years old on my own. So obviously, like, that took a lot of healing and a lot of stuff. And, you know, that's, you know, I see that as that's part of my story and my tapestry. And the gift from that is that I have incredible resilience, you know, and I have a really good ability to kind of recognize when things aren't right and be able to kind of move through them quite quickly.
Wow. So I just want to, you know, because I can't let a story like that go unremarked upon. Firstly, wow. And secondly, you know, what incredible resilience, as you say. But, you know, not everyone has that resilience. So there's got to be something innate in there as well, because there are obviously some people who have similar upbringings who don't bounce back as well as you've done, or have the same, you know, good fortune to have someone to take them under their wing. Where has that resilience served you in your business most? I mean, clearly, you know, you've had your personal journey, which, as you say, is part of the tapestry of your life. But as you say, that gift from that has been the resilience. And how has that been so incredibly important in your naturopathy business?
I think that every business owner has resilience. You have to. Like if you're not resilient, you're gone. And I guess this is why we do have, well, amongst other things, like why there is such an issue with people not making it in business, because you do have to have a thick skin and you do have to be adaptable, because it's that squiggly line. Everything change, like things can change very, very quickly and you need to be able to cope with that. But I don't know, I think everybody has that, the potential to, you know, to be resilient and to harness that. But I guess in my field, it's all about having the right support team, being able to heal from that and being able to take what we call like the wisdom from the wounds. And everyone has that ability. It's just they may not be ready. And that's the difference between, I think, other people that might perhaps have a similar story to me but haven't done the healing and haven't been able to do the work in their lives is that it's just they're not ready for that kind of next level of growth.
I think you're right. Every business owner has to, by definition, have some resilience. I also think that every business owner's got to have a fair degree of perseverance and stubbornness as well. I mean, I don't know about you, but yeah, there's that old saying, you know, people bash their head against the wall and get a headache. Or I sometimes bash my head against the wall and, you know, keep bashing until the wall breaks. And in the meantime, yeah, I still get a headache, but the wall's going to damn well break if it kills me, you know. So, you know, I guess what I'm hearing you say is you've had that resilience, but you've also had some perseverance. You know, sound like you're a headstrong person that you mentioned. So those particular traits have served you well.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
So what I just wanted to ask you really quickly for people, and I know that you said don't give advice to people, you know, or don't listen to advice from people who don't know your business. So we're going to keep this generic. I do want to ask you for some advice because, you know, there'll be people listening who'll say, you know, that particular recurring profit model or, you know, membership model is really interesting, really fascinating, or, you know, how do I develop some resilience or, you know, whatever it might be. But if you were going to, you know, put your two or three keys to success in business on a bumper sticker or on a billboard on Milton Road there, what would be a couple of keys to success that you would like to share?
I think the biggest thing is knowing your why, being really clear on what you're trying to achieve, why you're doing it, your values is so, so important. And it wasn't until I got really clear on that I started attracting the right people, that my team, you know, got behind me and that everything really started to flow. And it's always the re-examining of that too, because it can change. You know, what are our values? What are we trying to achieve? Are we actually hitting that as a team? So that's really important from, you know, attracting the right people point of view, but also just culture and retention for me. The other part of it is, I think you need to be a little bit creative and sometimes think outside of the box. For me with business all the time, I'm constantly analyzing, is this working? Could it be better? You know, what's happening with this? And really like thinking about your sticking points and just putting a bit of strategy behind it. You know, so if we have a problem in the business now, we document it and then we're like, okay, well, why is it a problem? What do we need to do to fix it? How will things change if we fix it? What are the steps involved in that? So that's something that's also really, really important for us.
Love that. So, okay, ladies and gents, you just heard it there. Three really, really salutary points there for success. Yeah, certainly from Catherine's perspective, and I'd share that. Just before we do, I want to just tap into something really quickly because you've spoken about creativity a couple of times. Do you draw your ideas? Are you good with a blank canvas, or are you the sort of person that kind of takes an idea from another industry and goes, hey, that's cool, let's do that in our industry? Or do you just come up with fresh ideas from scratch?
I come up with heaps of fresh ideas from scratch, but I'm also looking at other places for inspiration as well. Definitely. It's, you know, we need to think outside our box in our industries. Like, this is the thing with, well, I thought our industry was stale, and then I went to a innovation meeting for lawyers, and I went, okay, well, maybe not so bad. But it is. But in health, it's stale, you know, and it's everyone does the same thing, and we're in this model, and it's just everyone's doing the same thing all the time. So it does take a little bit of bravery, I think, to break outside of that mold, because as you were saying, you will get the naysayers. You'll get people that'll be like, oh no, like that's not going to work. When we first introduced packages, you know, we lost team members because they said it was unethical, even though essentially it was doing exactly what we did, but in a package that kind of helped the client more. So you know, you've always need to kind of, I think, be a bit brave, break the mold, do something new.
Yeah, I love that. Catherine, I know that you've got a fairly full dance card today, so I wanted to say thank you from everyone here at Savvy Dentist who's been listening. Really appreciate your wisdom, your insights, your generosity, and you know, the knowledge you've shared is just first rate. So we really are very grateful to you for taking the time out of your day to come and hang with us.
My absolute pleasure.
Cheers.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast. For more episodes, go to drjessegreen.com/savvydentist. And to discover how to build a high-performance dental practice, visit drjessegreen.com and download the free report.